When you stop and think about some of the major turns in the environmental movement over the last 45 years or so, the instrument has often been the gavel, rather than the gun or the chainsaw or other tool that has a direct bearing on the environment and its inhabitants. Court case after court case changed the way the law is applied to the landscape, and of course it's still happening. A recent case over water brought a ruling that identifies groundwater as a public trust in California under the Public Trust Doctrine. Let's get into what that means and which case triggered the finding. James Wheaton is board president and legal director at the Environmental Law Foundation and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange today. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. How's life in Jefferson today?
Well, hot and dry and windy.
Sounds like. Right.
Would you give us the specifics of this case?
Yeah, pardon me. This case was filed 4 years ago to advance the notion that the public trust, which means that there are resources that belong to all of us, such as the air, the water, migratory birds, the tides, and so forth, that doctrine, which is ancient in law, almost 1,000 years old, should also apply to groundwater, where that groundwater is connected to the surface waters.
Is there public, surface water already considered a public trust?
Yes, all navigable waters, any place you can float a boat, including lakes, rivers, the tidelands, and so forth, are all part of the public trust, which means they can't be owned privately by anyone, and they have to be maintained by the state as the trustee for all of us.
But if you can't float a boat, if you've got a smaller stream, does that not count as a public trust?
Non-navigable streams have generally not been included in the public trust, with one big exception that we're relying on. Almost 40 years ago, the Mono Lake down in Inyo County on the east side of the Sierra, Mono Lake was drying up, and it was drying up because Los Angeles was pulling water out of the small tributaries that flowed out of the mountains and down into Mono Lake. And the California Supreme Court in a landmark decision said that while those streams weren't navigable, we had to regulate them under the public trust doctrine, treat them as a public trust belonging to everyone, where it involved withdrawals that were hurting the navigable water. We looked at that precedent and said, gee, if it applies to the upstream tributaries that feed the public trust waters, Mono Lake, shouldn't it also apply to the underground streams, the groundwater, where that feeds the surface waters? And a court in Sacramento just last month held, yes, indeed, the same precedent applies.
And so this was involving the Scott River, is that right?
The Scott River is our showcase, but it's a statewide precedent that will apply to all groundwater connected to the rivers of the state.
All right, so let's start with the specifics then. I mean, in the case of the Scott River, what was happening? What prompted your action in the first place?
About 20, almost 30 years ago now, the Scott River went through an adjudication, as it's called, which means that you determine who is allowed to pull water out of the Scott and how much and at what times of the year and so forth, and you settle all that, and then everybody lives happy. But the adjudication only went beyond for the groundwater, the adjudication only went 500 feet from the stream, and then there was nothing. So what's happened, of course, is there's been a land rush of sorts to drill wells more than 500 feet from the stream, get down into that groundwater, and pull it out. The practical effect of that is that the Scott River actually dries up in much of the summer and fall because of the withdrawals. If you pull the water out, in effect, the river is flowing downward or backward or into the ground, and it's just a series of stagnant pools. And the USGS data, as well as observations, make it clear that there really is no river. Therefore, it's destroyed the public trust in that river. So we decided to go after the groundwater withdrawals and require the county and the state to begin to plan, manage, and regulate to protect the river.
So I understand California is unique among states. It does generally not regulate groundwater withdrawals?
Yeah. What we're doing with the public trust is part of a much larger narrative. California, you're correct, is the only one of the western states that doesn't manage, measure, or regulate groundwater withdrawals at all. It's a little bit stunning because as much as half or more of the water that's used in California now comes from groundwater, and to not even measure it, much less manage or regulate it, has resulted all over the state in subsidence of land, in dropping water tables, in wells going dry. So this is really the first step in trying to get a handle on that.
It seems unusual that California would be the state where there is no groundwater regulation like that, given that it is a fairly dry state over many portions of its landscape, with water needs that tend to be elsewhere. I mean, a lot of needs in Southern California, for example, where there's a lot of water in Northern California.
Yeah, here in the 21st century, it's really mind-boggling that such an important public resource, really critical to the state's continued viability, growth, it's critical to the future of agriculture, industry, as well as our cities, that the groundwater should be completely unmanaged. And as a result, we're seeing overdrafting of groundwater, and it's creating a disaster in certain parts of the state. The reason we have that, though, is really just an artifact of the 19th century. Back in the 1800s, we wanted people to tap groundwater, to grow crops, to feed livestock, to build our cities and so forth. And so that land rush mentality was kind of hardwired into the way that we deal with groundwater. In addition, back in the 19th century, hard to believe now, but people thought that groundwater was completely disconnected from the surface waters. And that's enshrined in old, old California law, that the two, never the twain shall meet. Every hydrologist who's ever had even a beginning class, every judge that's looked at has said that's a fiction. They are connected. And yet our laws are still in the 19th century. So we're trying to bring them into the 21st.
James Wheaton, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, board president and legal director at the Environmental Law Foundation. We are talking about the concept of groundwater as a public trust, newly applied in a court case brought by his group and others. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760. We welcome your questions and comments. Our Rogue Valley local number is 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. Just to go into the hydrology junior league version here, the fact is that if you do have wells generally pumping groundwater out, you're lowering the aquifer, therefore there's less water available for the stream itself. Is this the general view?
That's correct. A simple way to think of it is if you take a cross-section of a river and the environs on either side of it, what you've really got is a large amount of water moving, some of it underground, and the river really is just a low spot in the surface of the land. But it's all the same water all moving together.
Now, are we sure that there would still be a Scott River even without the groundwater withdrawals? Is anybody confident enough to make that claim one way or the other?
Yeah, we can look at the historic records. The river gauges that the United States Geological Service runs gives you real-time data over years and even decades, and you can see the decline of the Scott as the pumping increased over the most recent decades.
Now, I understand there actually was a 1980 lawsuit, a court decree about water use in the Scott Valley, and what had happened since that time?
Yeah, in 1980, they had already begun to see that the Scott could no longer deliver water to all the people who had permits to do their irrigation. They were running out of water, and so what they did is called an adjudication, or it's really divvying up the stream flow between those who have permits and rights to pull that water. They did that, and they also did some of the groundwater, but not all of it. And the problem is then that the additional wells a little further from the river but still connected to it began to proliferate, and that's what caused the steep decline.
Well, we watched the adjudication process unfold in the Upper Klamath Basin a year ago, in which the Klamath tribes ended up with the senior water right. Is there one water right holder above all others in the Scott Valley?
No. Like I think with all streams in California and probably Oregon as well, there are, think of it as layers of water rights holders, with the most senior ones generally having the more powerful rights. Sometimes those who are immediately adjacent to the river, they have what are called riparian rights. They may have more senior rights, and then it just cascades down from there.
Which raises the question that seems to come to mind here is that do bodies of water have their own water rights? We talked about the near disappearance of Lake Abert in Oregon, down to 1% of its historic levels, or its full pool level, I should put it that way. And now we're talking about the Scott Valley running dry in seasons. Does a body of water have a water right of its own just to exist?
I wouldn't say that the body of water itself has a right to exist, although there is a philosophical line that goes direction. Our laws deal with our rights amongst each other and among people. And the public trust doctrine is an important one because it says that certain resources, like a river, like a lake, belong to all of us, not to any of us. And none of us can behave in a way that hurts our common resources. So yes, to answer your question more directly, yes, there is an ability to say we need to preserve this resource from those who are hurting it, and it needs to continue to exist for all of our benefit.
And yet, as you drive through Siskiyou County, you can see signs out there save our Scott River towns. SOSS, I think, is the name of the organization. I can't remember the acronym off the top of my head, but there's been concern about the water there for a number of years.
Yeah, there's always a tension between the notion that there are rights and resources that are held in common for all of us and the rights that individuals hold for their own personal benefit. And that's a tension that's always going to exist in California and, in fact, in all of American law.
So, Jim Wheaton, give us an idea of the long-range impact of this decision, should it stand.
Assuming that this decision is upheld in the courts of appeal, or perhaps even the California Supreme Court, it will, for the first time, require that California begin to measure, manage, and regulate at least some of its groundwater to protect all of its surface waters, and would apply throughout the state. It will be a path-breaking decision.
Is there no measuring and managing anywhere in California of groundwater at this point?
Currently, there is essentially no measuring, management, or regulation of groundwater. There are a few cases where individual groundwater basins have had the same kind of adjudication I mentioned earlier that rivers have. But those are few and far between, mostly in Southern California. But for the most part, where most of the groundwater is, no measurement, no management whatsoever. It really is astonishing.
So the obvious other question is, if this stands, and that comes back to the question of whether, in fact, this will be appealed. I mean, it seems like just about every environmental lawsuit ends up in a second court.
Oh, there's no question, but this is going to go up to a court of appeal. And we actually support that because we think it's important not just be one county. It's actually the lawsuit is in Sacramento. That it apply not only there and the Scott River, but this be a statewide precedent. So we'll actually support it going up on appeal, although we want it to be affirmed.
Is there any injunctive relief that comes with this ruling, anything that stops anybody from doing anything that they're currently doing in the Scott River Valley?
Yes, the lawsuit, after we've established the precedent that it must be regulated, we are going to ask the court to order the County of Siskiyou to stop issuing well drilling permits until they have a plan in place to protect the flows of the Scott.
Right, so that's permits for new wells, but the existing well users not affected essentially by this decision, at least in the short term?
Our lawsuit only looks at new wells, but the state, which is also a party to the lawsuit, does have the power to reopen the adjudication and to look at all of the wells and all of the permits, whether it's surface water or groundwater, and we think that they would probably do that.
Now, I noticed the decision came from Judge Alan Sumner in Sacramento Superior Court. Is this just because you were aiming at state law? I mean, you file suits there. I mean, as people will file lawsuits about state government at Oregon and Marion County Circuit Court.
Yeah, we filed a lawsuit because the State Water Board is a party to the case, and the proper place to sue them is in Sacramento County.
All right. And so who are the other operatives here in the case? Who are the other plaintiffs in addition to the Environmental Law Foundation?
We got the Pacific Coast Federation of Fisheries. So it's not just environmentalists here, but it's also the people who depend upon the rivers and the fish and the flows for the very livelihood, the fishermen as well, the commercial fishermen.
All right. Since this decision came down July 15th, I mean, we got the news about the huge amounts of groundwater that have been pumped out of the Colorado River Basin. And I have to believe that that's a development you watched with interest.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a problem throughout, and not just California, but really throughout the West, where groundwater pumping is beginning to supplant pulling water out of the surface waters. But again, it's all the same water.
So ultimately what we're ending up with here, if this ruling stands then, and who knows how many levels of appeals it might go through, you end up regulating the placement of new wells, the permitting and placement of new wells, but are you looking then at a backward look at older wells across the state of California?
Well, if this ruling stands, it will give the State Water Board, the power to look at all wells, both new and existing. That was an important part of the California Supreme Court decision I mentioned in Mono Lake. They said that the state has a continuing duty to look at all diversions and withdrawals to protect the public trust, and nobody has a permanent right to take water if it's harming the public at large.
So, Jim Wheaton, this could be a major change in the way that water is dealt with in the state of California, couldn't it?
I hate to use the pun, but it would be a sea change in the way that water and groundwater are dealt with in California. It really completely changes the way the law is applied, and in our view, takes it out of the 19th century, putting it into the 21st.
And so what's the next step here? Are you just waiting for another shoe to drop with somebody to file an appeal?
We're working with the other side, the County of Siskiyou, which is fighting this very hard, in a very civil and cooperative and really professional way to try to package this so it gets up to the Court of Appeal so we can get a statewide precedent. And we're working together on that.
The cooperation comes from you both really want to know what the ultimate answer is, it sounds like.
That's exactly right. We both know this is an extraordinarily important issue of law, and it needs to be decided. Uncertainty is unfair to everyone, whether you're a pumper or a fisherman or anyone else.
All right. So far, the judge says groundwater, a public trust. Yes, it is a public trust, subject to the public trust doctrine, which, as you heard already, is a very old legal doctrine around the world. James Wheaton is the board president and legal director at the Environmental Law Foundation. Jim, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.